This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mueller Program. The Dangerous Book for Boys. I mentioned it earlier this week, and I wrote a major article about it. I published it on my website, albertmueller.com. It has received a lot of attention. I've received so much email about it and so much interest just over the last several days. We decided we just got to talk about it today and invite you to join the conversation. By the way, here's the subtext. It's okay to be a boy again. The Dangerous Book for Boys is a book that is really nostalgic in one sense, going back to kind of the heyday of boys' literature. But it's just a lot of fun. It tells boys how to be boys. It talks about all the kinds of stuff that boys love to do and love to know about. And HarperCollins has published it. It has become a runaway publishing sensation in Great Britain. It's taking off here. The publisher expects to sell as many as 4 million copies of the book here. It's a big book. It's just a really great book. But it raises a huge question. And that question is this. For so many years now, the larger culture has tried to deny the importance of sex differences. We have everything from Title IX dealing with sports to all the affirmative action kind of stuff, and it has become politically incorrect to suggest that boys are different than girls. But as politically incorrect as that might be, nature has a way of coming through. And we as Christians understand that God's glory is actually not only in the fact that men and women, males and females, are equally made in His own image, but also in the fact that there is a distinction, there is a difference. We're going to talk today about why this shift has come. And I'm going to bring in some other evidence as well. And then we're going to talk about how we encourage boys to enjoy being boys. And also how we encourage them to grow up to be young men. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. The publisher tells us, by the way, that not only is this book a runaway bestseller among 13- and 14-year-old boys, but among their dads, who are all still boys at heart anyway. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. One of the reasons we're talking about this is because we are living in the time, and I mean this exactly the way I'm going to say it, the time of greatest gender confusion in human history. I don't see how it could be otherwise. How could you possibly describe this day, this era, in any way other than the most confused about gender in human history? When in human history, in any previous generation, century, or era, did you face the kind of headlines we have today? Let me tell you, here's a headline from the Baltimore Sun. Headline today, article by Liz F.K., reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Here's the headline. Transgender minister is reappointed. Subtitle, Pastor leads Charles Village United Methodist Church. Now, you've got to hear this news article, at least the lead sentences, to get the gist here. A year ago, the Reverend Ann Gordon received her routine appointment, reappointment as minister of a Charles Village Methodist congregation. Yesterday, after undergoing a sex change operation and taking on a new symbolic name, the Reverend Drew Phoenix received another one-year contract to head St. John's United Methodist Church. This is about more than me, Phoenix said after the decision by the bishop of the Baltimore-Washington Conference of the United Methodist Church. This is about people who come after me, about young people in particular who are struggling with their gender identity. I'm doing this for them. The decision came after a 2.5-hour closed meeting with Methodist clergy, as well as an emotional open session with about 1,600 clergy and lay people gathered in Washington. While Methodists do not permit non-celibate gay clergy, no rules deal with transgendered ministers. So here we're talking about a level of gender confusion that, well, it's just unprecedented in human history. I guarantee you, you cannot find a headline like this in newspapers from just a few decades ago, much less previous centuries. This is reflecting a radical transformation in the way human beings think about themselves, not just about gender, not just about sexuality, but about what it means to be human. Because throughout most of human history, we have known what the gender of a person is, what the sex of a person is. The moment they were born, we've known that there were boys and there are girls. And we've known that boys are supposed to grow up to be men. Girls are supposed to grow up to be women. And they are supposed to eventually hook up together in what is called marriage, in the covenant of marriage. And then coming with that is reproduction and all the other gifts of marriage. And thus continues civilization. But now we're in an age in which you can pick up the Baltimore Sun today and find a headline about a transgender minister being reappointed. Listen to the nonsense that is behind all of this. I mean, after all, this bishop reappointed this person because supposedly the United Methodist Church, while it does not permit non-celibate gay clergy, doesn't have any rules on transgender ministers. There is so much going on here. The Reverend Drew Phoenix, this is the minister who was a woman before and supposedly is a man now, says, quote, "The gender I was assigned at birth has never matched my own true, authentic, God-given gender identity, how I know myself. Fortunately, today, God's gift of medical science is enabling me to bring my physical body in alignment with my true gender," end quote. Let's just point out the obvious here. That isn't even true. I mean, not only are her fundamental assumptions here not true, it is untrue to say that God's gift of medical science is enabling her to bring her body in alignment with what she calls her true gender. If that were true, then, well, let's put it this way. She'd be able to reproduce. But she is not. She is claiming a science here that by the application of certain surgical techniques may make her look more like the gender she would rather be. But it cannot make her a man. Sorry, it just isn't going to happen. The law here, as we know, is so convoluted these days. We talked about the fact that the New York City Health Department had considered leaving the gender issue open for people just to declare themselves whatever they want to be. We're living in the most confused age. I have received emails from parents who said to me, my third grader went to school on Monday and discovered that the teacher, known as a man on Friday, is a woman on Monday. How do I handle that with an 8-year-old? Well, just imagine here's an entire congregation trying to figure out what to do when the Reverend Ann becomes the Reverend Drew. Now, obviously, I have issues here with the whole issue of order in the church. I mean, first of all, this assumes that, well, it assumes that we're making up an entire system of biblical interpretation as we go. Let me just point out again the obvious. In order to get to Reverend Ann, you have to deny clear teachings of Scripture concerning the fact that those who should be preaching and teaching are men. I mean, you're going to have to find some way around that. If you can find a way around that, then I suppose you can try to find a way around Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 and the very consistent clear teachings of Scripture about the differences between men and women. Here again, we have an ideology of autonomous individualism, where the individual is so autonomous that he or she gets to decide who he or she is at any time. And this is especially now true with the sensitive issue of gender, the sensitive issue of sexuality. And people claim the right to be or to do whatever they want, to be whomever they want, even if that means medical surgery, even if that means becoming a man or presenting oneself as a man. I really theologically can't say becoming a man, and I don't think anyone can anatomically say becoming a man. But you can say presenting oneself as a man, and of course the opposite is also true. Just back in 2002, the Reverend Richard A. Zemanski, the pastor of a Rockville, Maryland congregation, returned from a leave of absence to undergo a sex change and reapplied to resume the post as Rebecca Steen, but the Methodist Book of Discipline, which doesn't mention transgendered or transsexual people, was basically inconclusive. It turned out that this man was not reappointed. Very interesting point. Mark Tooley, who is an organization that keeps a close watch on the Institute for Religion and Democracy, keeps a very close watch on these issues in mainline Protestant denominations, mentioned that the bishop then offered to send this man, who had presented himself as a woman, as a missionary to Angola. Now, just imagine that. The bishop says, "I won't reappoint you to this church, but I will send you as a missionary to Angola." Rebecca Steen declined, saying, and I quote, "Angola is not a good place for a transgendered woman to be," end quote. Now, that's likely to be a colossal understatement. But in any event, it demonstrates something of the confusion of our age. Where does all this lead? Well, it's a huge, huge challenge to us. Just imagine, it's not hypothetical, it's real. What happens when someone shows up in your congregation having changed sex? Do you have a clear understanding, a biblical understanding in your church of gender and sexuality? Can you handle this? If not, you're going to find yourself in big trouble. Christians and Christian churches in particular are going to have to think this through and quickly and come up with your understanding of this issue, because if you do not, it's going to show up in Sunday school, in the youth ministry, in the next pew, in the choir, or just ask this congregation in Maryland in the pulpit. It all comes down to whether or not God glorifies himself and his human creatures in the gift of gender. And in not only the fact that we are commonly made in his image, but that we are distinctly made as male and female. That's why we're going to be talking about the dangerous book for boys, and we're going to talk about why parents are discovering you just can't get around the differences. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be back with your calls.
This is the best of the Albert Mohler Program.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The book is entitled The Dangerous Book for Boys, and I got to tell you, I don't know of a boy who wouldn't eat it up. It's a big book, and by the way, its very format recalls the kind of the heyday of boys' literature from the Victorian era. It's red cloth stamped with black and gold writing. It says on the back, recapture Sunday afternoons and long summer days, the perfect book for every boy from 8 to 80. The book is written by brothers Con and Hallie Golden. And by the way, Connor Golden is the author of some historical novels that I have enjoyed as well. Boys of every age are going to love it. The book took Britain by storm last year and comes to America just in time for the summer. And a boy armed with this book is going to have a really fun summer. The book will tell a boy how to read cloud formations, how to make a battery, make a periscope, and construct the greatest paper airplane in the world. According to the book, boys are told of the essential gear of boyhood, including Band-Aids. Young adventurers will also learn of famous battles, the history of artillery, and how to understand girls. On the subject of girls, the authors warn that young females are likely to be, quote, unimpressed by your mastery of a game involving wizards or your understanding of Morse code, end quote. Boys are also soberly warned that girls, as a general rule, quote, do not get quite as excited by the use of urine as a secret ink as boys do, end quote. Now, this is important for boys to know. On the other hand, boys are told how to help girls who need assistance. Now, listen to this little piece of advice from The Dangerous Book for Boys. I just love this advice. If you see a girl in need of help, unable to lift something, for example, do not taunt her. Approach the object and greet her with a cheerful smile while surreptitiously testing the weight of the object. If you find you can lift it, go ahead. If you can't, try sitting on it and engaging her in conversation. Now, I can just think of almost every middle school boy I know needing that advice. Sadly, I can think of a lot of college young males I know who could use that advice. The Golden Brothers believe that boys need to get away from the computer screen, stop playing all those games, and get outside and learn to enjoy the world and make their way in it. Quote, boyhood is all about curiosity, they say. Boys need to know how to build a treehouse and how to find north in the dark, and they need to know that they know these things. Now, this is a statement from Con and Hallie Golden. How do latitude and longitude work? How do you make secret ink or send the cipher that Julius Caesar used with his generals? You'll find the answers inside the book. It was written by two men who would have given away the cat to get this book when they were young. It wasn't a particularly nice cat. Why did we write it now? Because these things are important still and we wish we knew them better. There are few things as satisfying as tying a decent bowline knot with someone who needs a loop, or simply knowing what happened at Gettysburg and the Alamo. The tales must be told and retold, or the memories slowly die. Now, one of the things I love about this book is that the boys are introduced to coin tricks, spiders, Shakespeare, and, quote, Latin phrases every boy should know. They learn how to waterproof fabric, juggle, and understand rugby. Connor Golden, one of the brothers who wrote the book, explained the book's success. He says, and I quote, in a word, fathers. I am one myself, and I think we become aware that the whole health and safety, overprotective culture isn't doing our sons any favors. Boys need to learn about risk. They need to fall off things occasionally, or, and this is the important bit, they'll take worse risks on their own. If we do away with challenging playgrounds and cancel school trips for fear of being sued, we don't end up with safer boys. We end up with them walking on train tracks. In the long run, it's not safe at all to keep our boys in the house with a PlayStation. It's not good for their health or their safety. Now, this is really important because all the right people love this book and all the right people hate this book. Now, who would hate it? Well, feminists don't like it because it is, and I quote, The Dangerous Book for Boys. That's the title. Some feminists are unappreciative of its approach, its title, its intended readership, and the fact that the word boy is even in the title. Matthew Benjamin, editor at HarperCollins that published the book says, quote, "We initially thought that men nostalgic for their boyhoods would be the buyers, but people are also buying it for 12-year-old boys. This book teaches them it's okay to play and explore." One rival publisher took the book home to his 8-year-old son to find out why it was so popular. The boy immediately jumped up from behind the television and no longer in front of the television was watching the program and talked his dad into testing paper airplanes long after bedtime. Quote, "That's the good news," the dad said. "The bad news is that now he expects me to build him a treehouse." Jane Friedman, chief executive at HarperCollins, herself the mother of two sons and two stepsons, is standing by the book. "There's no plan for a girl's version," she said. Quote, "Boys are very different," end quote. Well, of course they are, Ms. Friedman, and God bless you for understanding that. You know, I think one of the things this book reminds us of at this particular moment is that the differences between boys and girls just can't ultimately be denied. Let me give you a little example. I mentioned there's some other things out there in the culture. For instance, there are all these articles being written, and I just read one this week, an article in an education journal for teachers suggesting about how they should deny and try to eradicate sex differences. At the same time, I picked up the Pottery Barn Teen catalog. This is a furniture company, you know, house goods company, interior design company that is selling stuff to parents of teenagers for their bedrooms. And you can buy everything from the bed to the linens and all the rest. And guess what? It's divided between boys and girls. And I can also tell you this. You could open up that magazine, that catalog, and you're going to know that this is a room intended for a girl and this is a room intended for a boy. And by the way, I got a little jealous looking at this catalog because one of the things they're trying to sell parents of boys is a giant fiberglass realistic replica of a tiger shark. Now, find me the boy that wouldn't want a tiger shark on his wall. Well, I'll let Pottery Barn sell the sharks. I'm just going to talk about what it means. It means that, ultimately, you can't deny the differences. You can try it. You can ideologically try to force feed that through the culture. You can try to mainstream it through the educational process and through mandates at the local level. You can try to Title IX it. You can try to kind of just beat it into a culture, but eventually boys are going to be boys. This also reminds me of the mother that wrote my website just a couple of years ago and said that she had first bought into the idea that she could raise her boys and her girls the same way, and then she noticed what boys did to dolls. It, she said, isn't what girls do with dolls. One of them actually picked up a Barbie doll and treated her like a gun, went around shooting his little brother, running around with a Barbie doll as a gun. She wouldn't let them have guns. She only let them have dolls. And so Junior made the doll into a gun. She have a little postal, mass murderer in the future on her hands? I don't think so. I think what she had was just a little boy enjoying being a boy. And I think this just raises a good question for us to discuss today. It's Friday. It's one of those days when we're taking a big picture analysis of the culture and while we're thinking about the weekend and all the rest. Let me just ask you, if you've got kids in your house, are the boys and the girls going to be doing the same thing this weekend? When they go out and play, when they go out and do their thing, when they're with their friends, are they going to be talking about the same thing? Are they going to be doing the same thing? It reminds me of Time Magazine just a few years ago doing a cover story on the fact that boys and girls are different. And you may have heard me tell this before, but it just, to me, is just absolutely illustrative of kind of the stupidity that is sold as wisdom. Like, all of a sudden, we're supposed to discover that boys and girls are different? Who came up with that discovery? Well, it turns out that a couple of psychologists working with little boys and little girls and then older boys and older girls were looking at their conversation patterns. They had an empty room, had two chairs in it. They put two girls in it. Didn't matter the age. The two girls turned the chairs facing each other. They locked on eyes and talked nonstop. No insult, ladies, but it starts early. Different conversational pattern. You put the boys in the room with two chairs. They put them side by side, staring at the forward, at an indefinite object. Long pauses. They hardly ever lock on eyes. And, a whole lot of the language is summarized with grunts and, I don't know, what do you know? Boys and girls are different. That's what we're talking about today. And we're talking about why all of a sudden the dangerous book for boys and its runaway bestseller status tells us that even the culture at large can't deny the difference. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be back with your conversation on the Albert Mueller Program. We'll be right back.
Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. It's safe to publish a book entitled The Dangerous Book for Boys. And by the way, when they talk about danger, it's really a way of enticing boys to consider things that are fun and largely outdoors. And, yeah, they involve a little risk, but the kind of risk that under parental supervision you'd want your boys to take. And I think Kahn and Hallie Golden are exactly right. If we pamper our boys, keep them inside, we don't teach them how to take appropriate risk. We don't let them every once in a while fall off of something. And if we fear the worst thing that could happen to them is they are going to need a Band-Aid, you can pretty much count on the fact it's going to get worse when all of a sudden they take risks they should never take. As he said, if we let them play behind the PlayStation all day, when they decide they are going to take a risk, they're going to walk on railroad tracks. That's not what Hal and Kahn and Golden advise in The Dangerous Book for Boys. It is a fun book. It's a great book. It's colorful. It's, well, it's just one of those things that you say has arrived at just the right time. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Calling from Four Oaks, North Carolina is Tim, listening on XM 170. Go ahead, Tim.
Thank you, Dr. Mueller, for taking my call. I listen to your program every day. I totally agree with you. I have two boys. Both of my boys are, my oldest son is an Eagle Scout today. My youngest son is a Life Scout. I personally have been an assistant Boy Scout leader now for 16 years. And I work with, I have 22 boys in my troop. The thing about the Boy Scouts is when Baden Powell years ago started the Boy Scouts, the idea was for boys to have fun. They get out there, they learn how to hike, camp. Yes, they cut their finger once in a while with a pocket knife, make airplanes, campfires, just get out there and have a good time. And it's all about the learning of the outdoors and being a boy. And we try to teach moral aspects, you know, in the Boy Scouts. God comes first, being reverent to God. That's first and foremost in our troop. And our boys realize that. But even today, we see it so many times throughout the Scouts where female parents, mothers, try to become Boy Scout leaders, and it just won't work. It just don't work in our troop. We don't allow that. Yeah. But also today is, if you've heard in the past where there's been gays that have tried to be leaders in the Boy Scouts, and from my aspect, that doesn't work either. And I just wanted to, I'm going to hang up, and I just love to hear your comment on it.
Tim, thanks for your call, and thanks for listening. Let me say that one of the things I appreciate about the Boy Scouts is that they have largely resisted this politically correct tide. And as a matter of fact, it's important for their own survival that, for instance, they've been really careful to retain their standard of not allowing homosexuals as scout leaders and all the rest. That's very important. Political correctness tends to come in so many different ways. But let me say that I really appreciate the Boy Scouts. I was a Boy Scout. And, you know, as I remember it, my father would not let me be a Cub Scout, partly because there were women that were the leaders. And he probably thought I didn't have a whole lot to gain from that experience, that I wasn't going to get it home or elsewhere. I became a Boy Scout. Let me tell you, you know, I'll be not telling any news here for those who know me, but I really wasn't into sports as a boy, but I was into the outdoors, and the Scouts was just perfect. I really, really enjoyed the Scouts and had such good friendships. I loved the camping trips and all the rest and still remember some of the skills I learned there. But, you know, Tim, you raise another issue with the Scouts that kind of ties into this book. If I can think of one book most similar to The Dangerous Book for Boys I remember from my boyhood, it was the Boy Scout Handbook. And I can remember taking that book with me to bed at night just because I was so fascinated with the stuff in it, how to recognize different animal tracks, you know, how to use a pocket knife, you know, how to recognize different stars, constellations, and find your way using the stars. That's all stuff boys need. And I don't expect that my son's ever going to find himself out in the middle of a desert necessarily, actually having to use it in order to survive. That could happen. But I think it's just more importantly that boys have a connection to this knowledge. And I wrote something in my article. I said it's not only important that they know this stuff. It's important that they know it. It's an enormous way of building confidence in boys. Now, one of the things that I want to argue, in this conversation today is that when you deny the obvious, no one takes you seriously. If you're going to deny the differences between boys and girls, eventually boys and girls are going to recognize you're talking nonsense. They know they're different. But I want to take the argument further and say, if you do not teach boys a proper model of masculinity, your biggest danger is not that they're going to turn out to be effeminate. The biggest danger is that they're going to show an exaggerated masculinity that's going to come out in very ugly forms. We'll be right back.
This is the best of the Albert Mohler Program.
We're living in a dangerous culture. It's dangerous to talk about gender differences. It's dangerous in this culture, politically speaking, to say boys are different. We need to have some special experiences for boys, even as girls are different, some special experiences for girls. But you see, we're talking about this today because no one really denies the appropriateness of having special programs for girls. It's just that increasingly it's denied that you should have special programs, special products, special approaches for boys. But just ask Pottery Barn. They know the difference when they publish their catalog. And just ask the kids. They know the difference. And one of the sad things that has become a hallmark of our age is how many boys lack good male leadership in their lives, good male role models, in particular fathers, in order to understand what this looks like. Fathers do get it. That's why the first target readership for the book, The Dangerous Book for Boys, is dads. I'll admit, I picked it up when I first saw it in the bookstore. I picked it up because I wanted to read it, and I got hooked. And I was hooked partly nostalgia. Oh, absolutely. I remember a go-kart. I remember the fun of doing these things. I remember the fun. I can remember my parents gave me a two-volume work. One was on geography, and the other was on history. Four kids, basically, for boys, writing about different places in the world, different people. I ate that stuff up. And I remember reading about the Zulu Wars and about the Zulu Spear. Well, that stuff's all in here, along with how to recognize a venomous spider and how to juggle. Every boy needs to know how to juggle. And, of course, how to make what they call the world's greatest paper airplane. Others may debate it, but you know what? That's a good thing for boys to do this summer. Turn off the Nintendo. Turn off the PlayStation. Turn off the computer. Yank them outside. And give them some stuff that they're going to have to build, they're going to have to make, and just watch them come alive. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I published this article. I left it up. I did not publish another article this morning on top of it because I wanted to leave it up on this frame knowing that we're going to be discussing it today. I have received more email about this particular article than any I've written in a long time. I've heard from a lot of dads who have written in to say, boy, I can't wait to get this book. I've heard from a lot of moms who have said, this really helps. I got a sweet one from a mom I received in the last day or so in which she said, I have three boys, and just looking at this book makes me understand them better. And another comment I got from a mom was, I used to think my son wouldn't read, and I just discovered he didn't like to read the stuff I was giving him. There is other stuff he definitely wants to read. The phone number again, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from some moms and dads, or let's do it this way, boys of any age. And you may not have seen the book. You may already have the book. The issue is really about the entire question of how we help boys to be boys and enjoy being boys and learn that boys are supposed to grow up to be men. There are some masculine skills they need to learn. And, of course, it doesn't stop with how to tie the right knot. But it's not a bad place to start. It's not a bad place to start at all. The phone number, 877-893-8255. You know, when I was looking at the book, by the way, there's stuff in here on swimming and camping and all the rest. There's great stuff in here on clouds and how to understand cloud formations. And, you know, this is the kind of stuff that the boys can become expert on pretty quickly. And when you're driving along in your car on family vacation, you know, arm your son with this kind of knowledge and then have him tell you about the weather. You know, recite, have him tell you what a phrase means he's learned in the book. Have him explain how the Indians used smoke signals and all the rest. I guarantee you, that kid that wasn't very conversational about other stuff a few minutes ago is likely to come alive with a whole lot of conversational talent you may not have even known that he had when you ask him about something he knows about and something that excites him. And I love the statement from this dad who said, you know, he brought the book home, and the next thing he knew, he was spending all night folding paper airplanes way past bedtime with his son, who now wants a treehouse as well. Well, I don't want to know the boy that doesn't want a treehouse. I mean, that's a scary idea to me. But I'll tell you, we're living in an age in which kids just aren't getting out. We dealt with the Richard Liu book a few months ago about children that basically find themselves in the outdoors like they're in a foreign country. They don't even know it. They don't know how to exist in the outdoors. They don't know how to have fun in the outdoors. Their play environment has been a computer screen. Their entertainment environment has been a television screen. Turn off the electronics and kick them outside. The Dangerous Book for Boys is just another reminder to us that the essential skills of boyhood are really important as well. The phone number 877-893-TALK, 877-893-8255. Love to hear from you about your own experiences with your boys and perhaps some of the things you have planned this summer with your boys with summer vacation fast approaching. One of the things I heard from parents was, you know, my son, my kids, they're out of school in a few days, and we're going to find out what to do with them. Well, what about giving them this book and letting them plan their own time? What about letting them have some free time to figure out whether they want to learn how to fold airplanes today or they want to go out and try to recognize some animal tracks or they just want to go outside and have fun? But don't let them just vegetate in front of a digital screen. Let them go out and discover the real world, the world in which God's glory is in the trees and the creeks and all the rest. One of the things I look forward to doing with my son is being at the lake, walking in the creek, just doing the kind of stuff you do where you you get to see what God's given us in the outdoors and what an incredible world this world really is. The Dangerous Book for Boys is dangerous in a culture that wants to deny the difference because it's dangerous. It's downright dangerous in the public square to suggest these days that God's glory is actually in the differences between boys and girls, because we have been so immersed by cultural messages for the last couple of decades suggesting that there is no difference or there ought not to be a difference. And as a society, it's about time we say, been there, done that, it didn't work, and instead talk about how we can raise our boys to understand properly what it means to be a boy and to celebrate that, not in a chest-beating kind of arrogance, not in a hyper-masculinity that brings out the ugliness, but rather in the character and the nobility of helping boys to know what it means to be a boy and to grow up to be a man. I don't think we want to live in a culture that continues to deny the obvious. And by the way, again, that was a plan that just didn't work. Look at the kids on the streets. Those streets are dangerous largely because they didn't have the kind of experience talked about in the Dangerous Book for Boys. We'll be right back in just a moment, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program.
Welcome back. Very quickly, we're going to try to take these calls from Land O'Lakes, Florida. Evelyn's on the line. Go ahead, Evelyn.
Hi. I just want to mention that as a mother, you have to find out what your boys are interested in to keep them successful, especially with reading. I find that boys will read if you find the stuff that they really like animals or, like that guy said, camping or baseball, something like that, or football. You would have to find out what they really like in swimming, because my boys like outside very much.
Well, Evelyn, that's a great word. I appreciate your call. It reminds me of something I mentioned on the program sometime back. It was a specialist on magazines for men who said you put a power tool or a wild animal on the front, like a shark or a snake, and you'll sell the magazine. Same thing when you're talking about those boys. That's wisdom, Evelyn. Thanks for that call. Julie's calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Julie.
Hi, Dr. Moeller. I'm a grandma who has a little boy, a little grandson who's 3, and we are coming alongside his mom and dad, who was our son as well, and we're raising him to understand and to see the glory of God in nature, in rocks and trees and birds, and he is such a different person than his sister, but they're supposed to be. And he thoroughly and completely enjoys just being, you know, moving and being outside, and we're just real thankful for that.
That's a good word, Julie. And by the way, one of the differences between boys and girls is the boys' need for large muscle movements. That's just very different. A boy's body is likely to be responding with large muscle movements very different ways than girls. That's why boys have a very hard time. When you take an elementary school or kindergarten class, boys are having a very hard time. It continues through middle school and high school. Even in terms of the rate of bodily growth, the growth plates and all the rest, they're different. And that turns out different bodily activity as well. Not to say girls aren't in sports and girls aren't active. That's not it. It's just a different pattern. And we need to recognize that difference. Folks, I hope you and your families have a wonderful Memorial Day holiday. This has become the holiday that kind of marks the beginning of the summer for Americans. But we need to remember that this is a holiday that originates in loved ones who went to decorate, that is to memorialize, the graves of their loved ones who died wearing the uniform of the American Armed Services. And now that it has become a national holiday, it is supposed to be the day in which we honor those who have given their lives in the defense of this nation. It's a reminder to us that freedom is never free. When you're talking about raising boys, I would suggest that one of the best things we can do is to continue to take our sons among the dead. Take them to a national cemetery. Let them stand there with the lines and lines of those brilliant white headstones and remind them of the price that so many others have paid that we would enjoy this freedom, and of the fact that that price still must be paid for this land to be free. Honor, duty, country. Those are words we need to teach our boys as well. We'll be back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.